When I see those snow markers out there, I'm reminded that we are preparing for something, for snow. It reminds me, too, that we can prepare for the winter so as to experience it in a more mindful way, to make our own December. The word heretic has been used over the centuries to describe someone or someones who do not affirm the status quo, one who goes another way religiously. Used in this way, it has had a negative connotation. Yet the root of the word heretic means to choose. Since we do not have a creed, and since everyone is free to believe what they find to be true, we are by that definition, or at least we were in history, considered to be heretics, those who choose a path rather than have it decided by others. So here we are in early December, and all around us ramps up for the holidays. Here we are on the first day of Hanukkah. Here we are, some of us, in interfaith families. Here we are together, theists, atheists, agnostics, mystics, undecideds, mindfuls, or whatever label you might attach to yourself religiously. As you use, all of us choosers. This is a sermon about some things to consider in the choosing of how you might want to experience the winter holidays and its many opportunities. What is most important to you this time of year? How might you prepare for what is ahead in order to touch those things that are important to you? What traditions and rituals will you keep from your past, and which will you create anew, or have you? Did you ever see the Seinfeld episode that includes a celebration of Festivus? George Costanza's father, played by Jerry Stiller, Fred, I think his name is, in my mind, sick and tired of the commercialism of Christmas, creates a new holiday in his family called Festivus. And during Festivus, people gather around a bare aluminum pole, and over the course of the meal, or while they're gathered around the pole, he, Fred, tells each in the family how they've disappointed him in the last year. And then they go to something called Feats of Strength, which makes George cry. So one response to this month and its festivities is cynicism. I can relate to that. But I'm choosing not to go there this year. Given what is going on in the world, and as the dark increases and as we move toward the solstice, there is something beyond a critique of the way things are there for us. What will we choose? Instead of letting the holidays roll over us unconsciously, how can we become more present? This past Wednesday, I led a session at Wellsprings Wednesday about these very questions. First, the group, we shared one tradition or ritual from our childhood that we have as choosers given up. People spoke of letting go of the types of food cooked and shared that, while delicious, no longer matched their chosen vegetarian path. Someone has given up the glut of presents that were given to everyone and limited to two or three apiece, or even doing a name drawing so each person gets one thoughtful gift. What would you let go of? Following this, we shared what traditions or rituals from our childhood we have maintained. People mentioned a family tradition, one person, of drawing pictures on the last night of Hanukkah with her family. And now she seeks to continue that with her husband, though her children are gone from home, creating a new old tradition. Two people mentioned tangerines in stockings, which my kids miss if they're not there but don't actually eat. holiday cards to kith and kin. Some love that, some have given it up. And our candlelight and Christmas Eve service here at First Parish as things they cherish. We then sat in silence for a while and reflected on what qualities or experiences or meanings were most important to each of us in the month of the bringing of the light. So many rich meanings and qualities were listed. Service to others, giving to others, music and music and more music and singing. Sunrise in the dark before the solstice comes. Being connected to loved ones and being connected to the earth. Finally, we brainstormed some new rituals or things or experiences that we might create this year. I decided that I'm going to do a bonfire on the solstice, if it's legal, I'm not sure. Because nature is increasingly important to me and being connected to it. Putting notes of appreciation in each wrapped gift so that you're saying something about what you love about the person. Surprising someone anonymously with gifts or food. I heard of someone who, whatever they buy for their own meal, they double it and give it to somebody else. Some of us, by the way, on the 13th are going caroling. If you would like to meet with us, 4 p.m. on the 13th, which is a week from today. Going to people's homes who might not be getting out much right now. One especially poignant idea I thought I heard there was someone remembered the old 78s her father used to play, and she's going to find them and listen to them again. Rituals are the way we embody and preserve memory and hope. What will preserve the best of your best and move you to hope this season? Chalukah is one of those created rituals that a few families here participate in. Now I'm going to end this sermon with five things you might consider as you prepare for the holidays. But first I want to tell you some surprising history about the celebration of Christmas in this country as it relates to Unitarians and Universalists. When the Puritans came to America, they had experienced the celebration of Christmas in England as a rowdy, bawdy, frivolous, wild party with guns and fireworks. They knew Christmas was not biblical. I don't know how much Roman history they knew, but the Roman Empire put Christmas at the same time of year as their Saturnalia after they made Christianity the state religion. Never mind that Jesus was probably actually born when shepherds were actually out in the fields watching their sheep, another maybe summer, springtime. In 1652, the General Court of the State of Massachusetts declared the celebration of Christmas to be a criminal offense. This stayed the law for another 150 years. Now, you may be surprised to learn that it was the Unitarians in New England who brought the celebration of Christmas to America. They wanted to support a winter holiday that would bring families closer together through feasting and joy. And since many Unitarians were authors, they began to write about this and about Christmas and how it could bring families together. They focused on it as a home celebration, not so much with an emphasis on the birth of Jesus, as you would imagine, but it was there, but more as a family holiday. For instance, I read A Visit from St. Nicholas to my children every Christmas Eve when they were little. It's more commonly known as The Night Before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. This was written by Unitarian Clement Moore as a way to change the image of St. Nicholas from the real person, a bishop in Europe, who loved children, to an imaginary and jolly figure who brought gifts to every child in the world. Another Unitarian, Thomas Nast, a cartoonist, placed Santa at the North Pole as a message that he existed for all children. In our group last week, two people with Jewish backgrounds put trees in their homes at this time of year. Did you know that Unitarian minister Charles Fallon brought this tradition with him when he immigrated here from Germany? But there's more to this story. Fallon was a radical activist and was cast out of England because of it. He became a professor at Harvard, but because he spoke his opposition to slavery any chance he got, he was booted out of Harvard. And someone wrote that there was nothing left for him to do but become a Unitarian minister. And he served a nearby church, and I wasn't able to remember or find which one, but it could be Medfield or Medford. Do you know, Kara? Lexington. Perfect. Of course, the Fallon Church in Lexington. So now when I decorate the tree in my home, I think of Charles Fallon and his courage and his part in the abolition of slavery. The Unitarian poet Samuel Coleridge is sometimes credited with bringing the gift-giving tradition to the celebration of Christmas. He wrote about an experience he had on Christmas in Germany while he was visiting there, where children gave gifts to their parents. That's how it started. Children didn't receive gifts, they gave gifts to their parents. I guess we should go backwards a bit, maybe. Unitarians of the time were greatly focused on how children should be raised, without the idea of sin and punishment, but with the belief that parenting was about nurturing the good in children. Coleridge thought that Christmas gift giving would be an excellent way to teach children generosity. Who knew? How ironic is this that Unitarians brought Christmas to America? Suffice it to say that because of Unitarians and some Universalists too, one I'll tell you about later, a law was passed making Christmas an official national holiday in 1870. Now, this historic knowledge has given me a deeper connection to the Christian holiday of Christmas. I intend to tell this story at the dinner table on Christmas Day this year. Now, as promised, five things to think about in creating a month ahead that has increased meaning for you. There are many more than five, I am sure. Number one, spend some time recreating the meaning of childhood rituals so that they are more alive for you. For instance, instead of focusing on Jesus as the savior of humankind, focus on the social activist Jesus and how he came to teach that inclusion and diversity and service are those activities in life that can save us here and now. Or one of the people in the group who's going to recreate the Hanukkah rituals that her family had now that her children have moved away. Two, release the emotional longing we all have to some extent about recreating the mystery and wonder felt in childhood, if this was your experience. Letting go of this will help bring us more present to the everyday miracles that abound. Not living in what we're hoping to experience that, like it used to be, but living in noticing what is present now. Three, bring loss into your holiday experiences. Holidays make grief especially sharp as we remember loved ones who have died. In our family, we light candles for those we have lost and invite the memory of them as well as our grief to the table. Grief, after all, is love's companion. Always, always, always it is. Four, stay connected to the natural world. The lighted houses are lovely, but don't forget to look up at the stars. This morning, coming here in the dark, I saw the new moon of Hanukkah. Beautiful, beautiful. Take walks. Let the crisp air invigorate you. Let the winter wildlife give you joy. Last night, walking my dog, I saw an animal sitting by a shrub, and I thought it was my cat. And I walked right up to it, expecting to pick it up, and it was a rabbit. Not afraid, I don't know why, my Christmas rabbit. Let nature slow you down as you drink in the beauty. Find ways to serve others, number five. One family here throws a big dinner for not only their family and friends, but for those from other faith traditions who don't normally celebrate Christmas, or those who might be alone. Something that appeals to me is anonymously leaving a basket of goodies on the doorstep of a family who you know are struggling financially or otherwise. Whatever meaning the winter holidays have, the most powerful and consistent one is giving to others. Service. Doing things that heal the world. The five things. Re-meaning your old traditions and stories. Two, letting go of childhood feelings and being present for the miracles in your adulthood. Recognize loss, honor it. And four, stay in touch with the natural world. And five, give to others, serve. So I hope as we move forward into December that you will be a chooser, that you might shape your experiences toward the values you cherish, and be a giver. Whatever else you believe about who Jesus was or is, reaching out to the disenfranchised was his way, what his whole life was about. Find ways to honor him, as you said, about bringing healing or sustenance or love to others. I hope you'll be a receiver of miracles. The Maccabees received the miracle light as a gift from God, so the story goes. Despite what the news cycle tells us all day, every day, there is much good in the world. There is much health in us. We are about to sing It Came Upon a Midnight Clear, written by Edward Hamilton Sears, the minister right up the road in Wayland. There's more to this story, too. Sears was a Universalist and worked to make Christmas more about peace and bringing social justice to the world. In 1849, fresh from the wicked United States War in Mexico, and as revolutions were breaking out in Europe, Sears wrote his humanist carol, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. I cannot sing it now without paying tribute to the kingdom of equals that Rabbi Jesus spoke of and died for. I cannot sing it without being proud that equality and social justice have long been signature aspects of my religion, Unitarian Universalism. And this year I sing it as a prayer that our stunningly beautiful and extremely troubled world find its way closer to peace, as it seems so far away. Stand now and let us sing to the man Jesus and sing to those who came before us to fight for justice and equality. Sing for the planet we love and the hope for its healing. Sing to the miracle of more light, and sing for the gift of this beloved community.